Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
There are about 2.3 million miles of natural gas and hazardous liquid pipelines in the United States today. This pipeline infrastructure is overseen by the U.S. Department of Transportation, whose subdepartment, the Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, or PHMSA, is the main regulatory authority. The agency has only about 100 federal inspectors nationwide.
The pipeline safety law provides federal authority for regulation of interstate pipeline facilities and a cooperative federal-state gas and hazardous liquid pipeline safety program where certifying state agencies can assume responsibility for intrastate pipelines.
The effectiveness of regulatory oversight has come into question following several accidents in September, the San Bruno, California natural gas explosion that killed 8 people, and 2 large oil spills, one that polluted the Kalamazoo River near Battle Creek, Michigan, and the other that polluted the water supply of Romeoville, Illinois. Also in September, U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood sent to Congress the proposed Strengthening Pipeline Safety and Enforcement Act of 2010, which would increase the number of PHMSA employees, increase penalties for violations, and establish improved rules for pipeline inspection.
We have with us today to discuss this important topic Cesar De Leon, former head of the Office of Pipeline Safety, which is now PHMSA, and he's now a pipeline safety engineering consultant whose company, Pan Am Pipeline Technology, is in Burney, Texas. Cesar, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, sir, for inviting me.
Can you tell us something about the pipeline infrastructure in the United States for natural gas and for hazardous liquids, and give us a sense of the role of pipelines in energy, the energy transportation market?
There are about 2.3 million miles, total miles, of pipeline in this country, and they serve 65 million consumers. That's residences and businesses. There are about 170,000 miles of petroleum pipelines. There are about 310,000 miles of gas transmission pipelines, about 1,200,000 miles of gas distribution pipelines, and another 800,000 miles of gas service lines. Those are the lines that go from the city streets to your homes. There are a total of about 2,500 gas operating companies and about 250 petroleum operating companies.
Are these pipelines mostly buried underground or are they on the surface?
Practically all pipelines are buried, except when they cross rivers, and they sometimes cross the rivers, spanning the rivers. Sometimes around compressor stations where they raise the pressure to move the gas or the oil. And there are about 400 miles of pipelines in the Trans-Alaskan pipeline system that are above the ground.
And how large are the typical pipes? And what are they made of?
The largest is about 48 inches in diameter, and that's the Trans-Alaska pipeline system. Most new gas transmission lines are either 30 or 36. They're steel pipelines, and the distribution pipelines, the ones in cities, are for the most part plastic. They're polyethylene with system pressures up to 125 pounds per square inch.
So that's means you rely pretty heavily on the quality of the joints when you're operating in those kinds of pressures, I assume. That's a critical issue.
Yes, that is a critical issue, but they do have the steel pipelines are welded, and so they have they're welded. The plastic pipelines are joined also with they're melded into each other, and they have good joints.
And the pipes, particularly the steel pipes, are they? You know, I have this image that when they're manufactured by a spiral welding process, so it's a strip of steel that's wrapped around and welded to a solid pipe. Is that the way it's done?
There are three different kinds of pipelines. For the most part, they're seamless pipes. They're just wrapped around and have a seam going down the pipeline. And there are also some spiral welded that have spirals as they go as they're welded down the pipeline joined and manufactured. But for the most part, there's a great deal of seamless pipe.
What's the condition of the pipes overall?
They vary. The federal regulations came into effect in 1970, and before 1970, about 50% of the pipelines in the ground today were installed before the federal regulations came into effect in 1970. But the federal rules establish very stringent operating and maintenance rules. So for the most part, they're being maintained to a high degree of maintenance.
Are the pipes that were put in the ground before 1970 subject to the same maintenance, or are they grandfathered to some different standard?
They were grandfathered with respect to design and construction. They were not grandfathered with respect to operation and maintenance, corrosion controls, and other similar regulations. But for the most part, they were already designed. They were already in the ground. So with respect to design and construction, they are grandfathered. But the operation and maintenance has a standard that says that if a pipeline becomes hazardous, they must be replaced.
So how do we assess the condition of these buried pipelines?
We have various maintenance and operating standards. We have corrosion control that required to be established. Be installed on pipelines, and they have periodic checks to determine the adequacy of the corrosion protection. They have various checks, at least a dozen checks of yearly checks for petroleum surveys, leak surveys, regulator checks, relief valve checks, valve maintenance checks that have to be done periodically during the year.
But as I understand what you're saying, those components are accessible. They're either on the surface, or that we can get to them and have somebody do a hands-on inspection. But what about the miles of buried pipeline? How do we know what that condition is?
Well, there are now and have been developed over the last four decades something we called inline inspection tools, which are normally called pigs, smart pigs in the pipeline industry, which are run through the pipeline to assess and determine the condition of the pipeline. And certain pipelines now that have been determined to be in a high consequence areas, that are in high consequence areas, have to have these smart pigs run through them periodically every 7 years.
What do the smart pigs look like?
Smart pigs are articulated, very complex apparatuses. They move through with the commodity. The gas pushes them through. They are able to determine the condition of the pipe, whether it has cracks, whether it has any anomalies in the pipe, whether it's lost material because of corrosion. and it's able to determine and keep a record of where this anomaly or where this defect might be in the pipe.
So how do pipes fail? What are the mechanisms for failure? What are the primary causes when they do fail?
Well, for gas transmission lines and for oil pipelines, from about 15% to 18% of the failures are due to excavation damage. About 25% are due to corrosion, and about 18% to 20% are due to material defect. The others have miscellaneous failures. For gas distribution lines, the lines in the cities, excavation accounts for 60% of the failures. There's only 2% of failures due to corrosion because those pipelines are now practically all plastic, and there's another 30% of miscellaneous failures.
So that's really interesting that in urban areas that the most of the failures are due to excavation. So that means somebody's opening up a hole from the surface for some construction or repair project, and they're not aware of the presence of the pipe. Is that what's going on?
They're supposed to be aware. There are one call systems throughout the country. They're managed by the state, where they have laws that says that before you excavate, even a homeowner, before he excavates, has to call a one call number so he can be notified if there's any pipelines in his area where he'll be excavating. Nonetheless, for various reasons, that's still one of the primary reasons for failure in the distribution system.
Are there cases where the problem might be that we don't have a precise data on the location of a particular pipe or other buried utility element? I mean, is there uncertainty about that?
No, there isn't. There isn't an uncertainty. The gas distribution companies, if they're going to excavate where they have a pipeline, they will come and mark with either flags or with paint on the ground where their pipelines are. It may be a matter of they try to get too close to the pipeline with their backhoes, thinking that the pipeline may be a little deeper, because they're supposed to use the backhoe up to a certain point and then hand dig down to the pipe. And they may be trying to save time with hand digging by getting closer to the pipeline with their backhoe.
Is there a standard depth for that pipe?
There are standard depths, yes. There are standard depths in the regulations. The regulations came into effect in 1970. More than 50% of the pipes were put in before those regulations came into effect. So there are differing depths for the pipelines, but for the most part, they are about 18 inches in the properties.
So that's pretty close to the surface.
Pretty close to the surface, yes.
I'm just curious with regard to the phone call. If I'm a homeowner, what could someone tell me over the phone that would really let me know where a pipe was located? That seems like a hard thing to describe over the telephone.
Well, you tell them where you live, and most of the one-call laws are if you're going to dig more than normally, about 12 to 16 inches. And if you're going to dig deeper than that, there will probably be a company person come and tell you where the line is.
I see. So the result of the phone call would be someone coming out who has an accurate map who could let you know.
Right. That's the distribution company that provides gas to your house.
And is the mix of regulatory oversight any kind of a problem? You've got federal, state, local government, you've got companies all with interests and different ideas of regulation. Does that cause any problems?
No, I don't I don't think it does. I think that it had the proper mix. Most distribution companies, the ones in cities, are put under the authority of the state, and the state has the appropriate people that can monitor those programs. They have checks on the companies to see that they're complying with the laws. The interstate pipelines are subject to federal rules because those interstate pipelines cross many states, and you can't have differing rules as you cross from one state to the other. A state can have more stringent rules than the federal rules if they deem that their state requires more stringent rules, and many states do.
So I want to take you back for just a minute to this inspection process and the pigs. Can you give us a sense of what kinds of technologies that they're using to detect the structural condition of the pipes as they move through?
Yes, there's two principal technologies. There's magnetic flux and there's ultrasound. Both of them are highly developed now, and both of them can detect cracks, loss of material, or any other anomaly that may be in the pipe material. Both of them are very accurate.
Do these devices, as they pass through the pipe, they record what they're finding and then you download it, or do they transmit as they're moving through the pipe?
When you receive the pig, the pigs are launched. There are pig launchers and pig traps. The pig traps, you pick them up, and you take off the information that's inside the pig, and you download it into your computer, and they'll tell you any anomalies. They'll tell you exactly where they are.
So the pig remembers where it was when it picked up something.
It up, and it's accurate within, I think, an inch or 2 inches. They'll tell you where it is in regard to around the pipe. They'll give you complete information on that.
That's very, very interesting. It as you describe it, it sounds to me like the launchers and the traps are effectively Y connections in the pipe, where you can shoot the pig in at one point into the regular pipe flow of the pipeline and then grab it at another point.
That's correct. Now, I should add that this is made for larger pipelines. This is not made for the 1 inch and 2 inch pipes that are in cities.
So, do current design standards require that at least the larger pipes be able to accommodate them?
Yes. In 1984, the federal rules were passed that said that all pipelines in the future had to accommodate pigs.
So, how do you assess then the pre-1970 pipes that might not accommodate the pigs?
They have. In 2003, they established high consequence areas and integrity management plans. Integrity management plans, if provided for alternate technology for assessing the condition of the pipe if they could not accommodate pigs. They are, you can hydrotest a pipe, and there's something called direct assessment where you use various above ground checks to try to and statistically determine the condition of the pipe.
My guess would be none of these older techniques are as good, though.
No, they are not as good as a pig. The pig is the best. Perfect world. If all pipelines were piggable and they would run periodic pigs, we'd have a much better sense of the condition of our pipeline system.
Now, Texas is considering mandating the replacement of some steel natural gas lines because of some home explosions, and Massachusetts is also calling for pipeline upgrades. When states make these regulatory decisions, who pays for the improvements? Is it the consumer? Is it the companies, the providers?
The consumers. The consumers will have to pay. The pipeline companies are privately owned, and they obviously must make a profit. And so if there's going to be significant costs, they'll put in for adjustment to their rate base.
The American Gas Association says that natural gas pipelines have an outstanding safety record compared with other modes of transportation. But the public perception, at least according to the September news coverage, is that pipeline failures are a major problem. Do you think that's an accurate description, or would you characterize this mode of transportation as relatively safe or very safe?
The pipelines are safe, they're getting safer. If I can give you some quick statistics on gas transmission lines, those are the 310,000 miles of pipelines in the country. Over the last 24 years, there's been an average of 2.7 fatalities per year over the last 24 years. Over the last 10 years, there's only been one fatality per year. So they're safe and getting safer. Nonetheless, a big explosion will make nationwide news, and that's why we. If you want to get some quick statistics, if you get a group of 85 people in the United States that live during their lifetime of 65 years, one person in that group of 85 will be killed in an automobile accident. If you get a group of 1 million people in the United States during their 65-year lifetime, only one person will die from a pipeline accident, from a gas transmission pipeline accident.
In the fatality statistics that you're quoting, do you include whatever you might call workplace injuries, where someone might be injured or killed when they're working on the pipeline?
Yes.
The reason I ask is it seems like that would be a much higher risk kind of circumstance. It's very different than what the average homeowner would experience, for example.
A fatality to a pipeline employee working on pipelines is included in the statistics for fatalities on gas transmission lines. They are included.
And gas and oil companies say that they're highly motivated to inspect their pipelines in order to avoid lawsuits and fines and so forth. But how do you think the penalties that they might expose themselves to compare to the amount that they might save by not investing in maintenance and pipe replacement? Do you think they're high enough to make companies really want to maintain their pipes?
Yes, I do. I don't think raising them is going to motivate them more. I think they're motivated now. I think that they don't want the publicity that they're going to be subjected to if they have a large explosion. I don't think they're going to try to save money by not putting in their appropriate safety measures. I think they're very motivated, and I just don't think penalties will motivate them even more. I think they're doing the best they can. I can't speak for all of them, but I surely understand that they're motivated to not have accidents.
So overall, do you think are we doing what we need to do to ensure the safety and functionality of the national pipeline network? I mean, are we inspecting enough or replacing at the right interval? And specifically, do you think this proposed legislation, the Strengthening Pipeline Safety and Enforcement Act of 2010, is what we need and is taking us in the right direction?
Well, it's taking us in the right direction, yes. I think the integrity management plans and the identification of high consequence areas started in 2003 are going to have an effect in the future, have an even greater effect in the future. What we have to recognize is that pipelines are aging. They're aging along with our highways, our bridges, our water lines, our sewer lines. The problem with aging pipelines is that when they rupture, they're dangerous, much more dangerous than a highway or a bridge or a water line. And so we're facing an aging infrastructure of pipelines along with aging infrastructure of our other major infrastructure. The difference is all the other highways, bridges, water lines, and sewer lines are owned by governments, and the pipelines are privately owned by corporations, and corporations are much more motivated to try to assure that they're safe because they're more dangerous when they do fail.
It's an interesting problem, and a big part of the challenge, as you've explained it to us, is that it's an infrastructure that's critically important to the economy and the function of the economy and our society. At the same time, it's invisible, and so when it sneaks up and does something that's unpleasant, we may react a little bit differently than we react to the 42,000 deaths on the highway network on a yearly basis. We really appreciate your sharing your expertise on this very important subject with us today, and I thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thanks.